President-elect Donald Trump has declared his intention to withdraw U.S. dollars from international efforts to combat climate change. He says he's not convinced the phenomenon is real.
Do you believe in global warming, climate change?
I think that there'll be little change here. It'll go up, it'll get a little cooler, it'll get a little warmer like it always has for millions of years. It'll get cooler, it'll get warmer. It's called weather.
However, few scientists agree with Trump's stance on the reality of climate change. In fact, there's a lot of effort going into how to reduce or even stop the carbon emissions that cause global warming. So imagine this: cars that are no longer dependent on fossil fuels. Instead of gasoline, they'd run on a new fuel called butanol that's made with the help of bacteria from three simple ingredients: sunlight, air, and water. And it doesn't harm the atmosphere. It may sound far-fetched, but a group of UC Berkeley scientists say it's entirely possible. KLW's Judy Silber explains.
Rising from a plaza on the UC Berkeley campus is a cluster of three concrete buildings. The architecture is not the prettiest, but named for a few of Berkeley's greats, they carry a legacy.
Wendell Latimer.
Gilbert Lewis.
Joel Hildebrand.
Okay, so maybe you don't recognize the names, but I can tell you, they're giants in the scientific world, some of modern chemistry's founding fathers. But that's Berkeley's past. Today, the scientists who work in these buildings are focused on the future. They're asking, can chemistry save us from climate change? Because for them, what's happening in our atmosphere, it all comes down to the big C's. What are the big C's? Chemistry, carbon, and collaboration.
Yeah, I went to Shanghai, Beijing, couple meetings over there. It was a long trip, 2 weeks, back-to-back meetings. So almost like giving one talk every day.
Peidong Yang is a professor in high demand, jet-setting around the world as he collaborates with other scientists and promotes his research. He's a material chemist. That means he works with silicon semiconductors, kind of like what you find in electronics.
Yeah, we're making new materials and trying to apply them to solve big problems that the society is facing.
Like climate change. Yang, like most scientists, has a pragmatic view of the problem. For him, it's a calculation of carbon, or more specifically, carbon dioxide. Here's the problem. It starts with fossil fuels. We burn them to create energy to drive our cars. The problem with that is it dumps excess carbon dioxide into the air, and that messes with the atmosphere. That's not good. But here's where Yang found hope. Plants, and you probably already know this, but I'll tell you anyway, plants have this almost magical process called photosynthesis. With just sunlight, carbon dioxide, and water, they can make useful things, like amino acids, carbohydrates, and lipids, all which can help them grow. Yang figured maybe he could devise a system that would mimic plants. The idea would be to use the same simple ingredients, sunlight, water, and CO2, to make a fossil fuel substitute. A big goal, but if successful, huge. Yang started to work on it. Now remember, he's a material chemist guy. So his vision was to use a semiconducting chip. In Yang's vision, everything would happen on the chip. But then a few years ago, two colleagues approached. They had an idea. They told him maybe the chip didn't have to do everything. Maybe bacteria could help. Open the door to Chris Cheng's laboratory, and you'll see rows of black lab benches, bottles filled with clear aqueous solutions, computers, and other fancy machines.
So what I'm going to show you is an electrochemical version of the artificial photosynthesis system.
Chris Cheng is also a chemistry professor, an electrochemist. He leads me to a ventilated fume hood, you know, like the ones on top of a stove. On the other side of plexiglass is a small glass beaker. Hooked up to the beaker are clamps and wires. At its bottom is a white magnet that spins. This definitely looks like an experiment.
What we have over here is essentially a sealed flask or glass cup. And then what we do is we put in these electrodes, which are hooked up to an open sort of solar panel.
He tells me that this solar chip, made in Peidong Yang's lab and about the size of a half-dollar coin, captures light and converts it into electrons. Bacteria clinging to the chip's surface can then use these electrons to do chemistry.
Just like you would ferment beer or bake bread, what you get is these types of bacteria or yeast in certain cases. They don't make food, but what they do is they make chemical products that we're interested in.
The difference is these bacteria are special. They're called acetogens, and usually they live in sediment below deep bodies of water. There, they take carbon dioxide and turn it into acetate, a molecule similar to vinegar. Why do we care about acetate? Remember, the whole purpose of all this chemistry is to make fuel. But before we get to fuel, just like a factory assembly line, there's one more step. The researchers feed the acetate to another kind of bacteria, and this happens in yet another laboratory. Compared to the last one we were in, this one is a relatively lively place.
So we're gonna go over here to the shakers.
Meet Joe Gallagher, a molecular biology PhD student. He shows me a shaking device where bacteria grow in open flasks with a bit of liquid food inside.
So bacteria grow really quickly, and so they need lots of oxygen to grow. So there are these heated boxes that shake them around and help them to grow.
The bacteria inside these shaking flasks are called E. coli, and they're genetically modified. You know, like GMOs, except we'll probably never eat these. Instead, as the E. coli grow, they take the acetate made by the first bacteria, and then, depending on how they're modified, voila! They make stuff, like biodegradable plastics, pharmaceuticals, and perhaps most importantly of all, butanol, a four-carbon molecule and potential fuel.
In the system that we've built, you would just use sunlight and carbon dioxide as your starting materials, and then the product that you get out, you would burn it in your car.
This is where it gets exciting, he says. Just like fossil fuels, burning butanol would release carbon dioxide, but
it's different than petroleum-based fuels because it's not like you're liberating new carbon dioxide. This is carbon dioxide that's been recaptured.
In other words, it adds up to zero. You're not adding any more carbon dioxide to the air. A new fuel with no extra CO2. Yes. The three scientists admit the technology has a long way to go. They're testing new, more efficient iterations. Then it has to be scaled up, tested, and adopted. But they say it's important to keep going.
As a scientist, we also have the sort of responsibility to solve big societal problems, okay? And the environmental and energy problem that we are facing is very urgent one.
Peidong Yang wants to go the distance, but after more than a decade of work, it's gratifying they've made it this far. It's a system that could help us move on from fossil fuels, perhaps towards a better future for us all. In Berkeley, I'm Judy Silber for Cross Currents.